Hi, I'm April Adams Pertwee. I'm your host of the Inside Story podcast. I've been telling people stories my entire adult life as a broadcast journalist, video producer, and digital storyteller. These days, you can find me at Lightbeamers, where I'm building a community of women who are ready to step into their brave by sharing their story with the world. On the Inside Story podcast, I'm bringing you some of the best stories I'm discovering from both the women inside of my community, as well as from around the streets of the internet. Plus, I'm digging deep to share some of my own stories with you along the way. My hope is that these stories will help encourage you to examine your own story so that you can share it with other people. I have a motto at Lightbeamers: when we share our stories, we shine a light. So with that in mind, let's get down to business today and share the light found in this episode. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to the Inside Story podcast. I'm your host, April Adams Pertwee. I'm really happy you're here today because we're here. Yes, I have a guest today. We, myself and Angie, are here to give you permission to totally kick ass. All right. Now, how's that for an opener? I cannot wait to introduce you to my good friend, someone that is in a mastermind that I'm in. We're getting to see each other's businesses behind the scenes. And I'm really excited to dive into her story a little bit more today. But she is the new author of a book called Permission to Kick Ass. And the whole idea around, and this is Angie Coley, by the way, the author. Hello, Angie. And, you know, the whole idea being there's a lot of ways that we stop ourselves from really shining and stepping out and owning our brilliance. And the world that you come from, Angie, is this creative background. We were talking before the show, kind of, I really resonate with this creative background, this freelance world, and not really owning the brilliance around being a business and owning the fact that you can actually really create something and totally kick ass at it. When it wasn't necessarily something that you were trained in, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this is going to be a really great conversation, whether it's talking about business or not, or being a creative or not, is irrelevant, because there's so many ways that people out there really do stop themselves because they're not giving themselves permission to just go be amazing, you know, just like go be amazing, like go do the thing that you want to do. Like if it's be a business owner, be a business owner. If you've never called, this is me. I didn't call myself a business owner for a long time. I really hung on to that word freelancer for so long. Like, you know, and once I let that go, I'm like, oh, I'm going to give myself permission to be a business owner. So I'm really excited about having this conversation with you today.
That's interesting. Let's just jump right in, because I think that's a fantastic starting point. The labels that we give ourselves and how they empower or disempower us. That the whole idea behind permission to kick ass came from a very similar place. Like, I wrote about it in the intro of the book, but my mentor, I had joined a copywriting community. At this point in my career, I'd been 6 years a copywriter, a professional copywriter, leveraged from nothing, by the way. I read a book and decided I'm going to do this, and then somehow figured out my way into jobs and then kept moving up from there. So completely self-taught and fell into these gigs. Well, no, I didn't fall into these gigs. I worked my way into these
gigs. You worked your way into them. Absolutely.
And I joined a community for freelancers who I put up on this pedestal. Like, I'm just a loser,
just little old
corporate
me.
Stiff. Yeah. Being paid a respectable salary to do this full time. But like, I'm a loser and these guys are winners over here being freelancers. And I don't know what to say. So I joined this community. I don't respond. I don't say anything for 4 months. And he called me on it, because at that point, the community was still small enough. Like, he could see.
He noticed you. He saw you.
He invites me to a call, and I like sneak off in my corporate environment, like to a locking conference room, and have this call with him. And he's like, why aren't you posting more? Like, it sounds like you've got some great experience and you've got something to contribute. And I'm like, I can't compete with these smart people over here. Your Dean Jacksons, your Ross, like they're brilliant. I don't have anything to add. And he goes, I feel like you're waiting for permission to be an expert. And you don't actually need it. You can help people. Like, there is such a thing as an accidental expert. You could go through a really rough divorce and suddenly people are coming to you for advice and feedback on how to handle that. And you can start accidental businesses with accidental expertise. So you don't need permission to help people with what you know. You can go do that right now. And in case you're waiting for somebody to give you permission, if that's truly holding you back, I hereby anoint you expert enough. Go help people knowing what you know right now.
And that's so good.
Mm-hmm. It just set something off in me. And that's actually how I became known as a copywriter and was able to leave my job and go freelance, is I took that advice and I ran with it. Well, not before having a little bit of a, you know, like a brown nose. Well, I hear all that. And yes, that's great. I have permission to be an expert. But what can I do to help you, Mr. Community Owner that I admire? And he was like, that's what you can do to help me. You can help people with
you can
what
just
you know.
Go be you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you can answer the questions you feel called to answer. You don't have to answer every question. Like, just go do that. And so as I started answering more questions and helping people and providing feedback in this community, I'm suddenly getting messages from people going, hey, can I book you for a consult call? Hey, can I hire you for this project? And it just grew out of that permission to help people, knowing exactly what you know now, not having to earn the title of expert from somebody somewhere.
I'm just sitting here thinking, like, you know what a gift that is? Because all of us belong to someone else's community, right? Like, you belong to his community, that copywriting community at the time. We all play in these communities where we hang out and we're learning, and you know, we might feel like we're the little guy on the totem pole or whatever it is. But and I lead a community, so I can see it from both lenses. But I'm thinking, man, that's the biggest gift we can not only give the community owners or host, but we can give ourselves, and we can give the community members, is we when we actually decide to just start taking up some space and sharing our ideas, inputting into the conversation. You know, in this day and age of the digital landscape, we all want engagement, right? Like engagement, engagement. But we want, and that's just for vanity numbers, but no, we really want engagement. We want engagement. We want to see. I mean, I learn all the time from other people. I'm not the know-it-all in everything, you know, and I'm not even the know-it-all in storytelling. I'm really not. I'm always even learning in that field too, but that is like real gold. That he said, you know how you can help me? You can help me by just showing up in this community and being you. Like, how powerful was that?
It was, I mean, it was life-changing. And that's the message that I'm trying to go out there. The right idea at the right time can change lives. And that's exactly why I do what I do and why I wrote the book. And that lesson would go on to repeat itself. It's like later on, I ran the copy team for a big name marketer, kind of a celebrity of the online business world. And people would always come up to me asking how to get some of his time, especially at events. Like, I just need 5 minutes on his calendar and I promise I'm going to change his life and his business. And I was like, the way to get on his calendar is to be in the community, be helpful. I promise.
Yes.
If you're in there being helpful, we are watching. The staff is watching and we know who is helpful and who's popping up and saying, I can help with that problem. Send me a DM. That's not helpful. What is helpful is saying, okay, yeah, I've been in a situation like that and here's what worked for me. And if you want to talk about it more, I'm happy to take this offline. There's a whole different energy between that second approach and the first approach, which is more about me. What can you give me for me to help you? And the second one is, hey, I'm going to help you. And if this leads to something further, great. And so—
And if it doesn't, also great, because I still helped you.
Yeah, because that was another thing that my mentor, Kevin Rogers, taught me with the giving me permission to be an expert. Pay attention to the things that you feel called to answer. Pay attention, especially when the answer you give is getting good. Like, you're sitting there just banging away an answer and getting gleeful. I'm going to shoot you a personal video. If it's something that you're that into answering and to helping somebody with, that's probably something that you should be creating content about or putting into your own video library or creating a course. Or like, it's fuel for what you're doing too. You're not just giving it away. It's dual purpose and it's awesome.
Yeah, that's a really good point right there. You know, kind of ninja. If you're out there really just genuinely trying to help, you know, other people, and you have a lot of say about whatever they're asking about, notice that, you know, repurpose that and share it with more people in your vortex, right? Like, put that out on your social media, record a podcast about it, put a video up on YouTube about it, whatever it may be. I love that. You know, and I want to go back to something you said earlier, just even about your own journey, because this is pretty fascinating, is that you were self-taught. And I mean, you work in copywriting. So that is not copywriting is hard. Okay. That is a skill. I mean, I've been a writer, you know, my whole life, because I mean, I'm just a journaler and I love to write. And I love to play on words and I love to be creative. But girlfriend, I am not a copywriter and I really admire, and I'm always, you know, the mastermind that you and I are part of in Ron's community, there's a lot of copywriters in there. And I feel like I've hit the jackpot because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm learning from the best of the best, you know, because I get on all your email list and I just pay attention to what you're doing. And I think it's not something that's easily self-taught. So first of all, kudos that, you know, you did self-teach yourself, however you did that. But I want to go through that. Like, whether it's copywriting or storytelling or online marketing or how to cut hair or whatever it is, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Everyone's an expert in something, or can be. Yeah. What did that look like for you? How did you decide it was going to be copywriting? And how did you go about becoming an expert in copywriting by going down that self-taught path?
That's a great one. I think so. To unpack it fully, we got to go back in time a little bit. I have a master's degree. We talked about this a little bit before recording that I actually have a business degree. And so to some people, it's funny that, or an interesting or curious that I wrote a book about building a business when I have a business degree, but because I'm somebody—
And giving yourself permission to build a business.
Yeah, exactly. I really only truly understand theoretical concepts when either I've got like a specific thought exercise that puts it into context, or it's my own personal context. Like, I'm not an abstract thinker in that way. I need to understand the thought process. And that's interestingly, like, one of my early mentors was the exact opposite of that. He offered to mentor me as I grew as a copywriter, but he's one of those like figure it out type of people. And I'm like, walk me through the thought process so that I can truly break this down. And it was a mismatch, but I thought I failed as a student. Like, I suck at this. But anyway, so I'm getting this degree and I think I'm going to be in TV development, that I've found the thing that I want to do. I'm working in LA. I worked for a lot of the majors, NBC Universal, CBS Films, Warner Brothers, like all of them. And I wanted to bring those shows to the networks and develop them into the network brand and find the next hit show. Like, I loved it. And then I got laid off from the Oprah Winfrey Network right before it launched. And from that point on, like, something clicked in the wrong direction. I had trouble getting jobs. I had trouble getting meetings. It was just a real struggle. And as I was running out of time and I'm running out of money, for some reason, one class from the course of getting this degree sticks out in my head. It's screenwriting class. I met a lovely lady by the name of Gladys Edmonds who told me, you know, and she's a journalist, I just met a man who released a book that you might like. It's called The Well-Fed Writer by Peter Bowerman. You should pick that up. And like, fast forward 2 years later to the depths of my struggle, my brain goes, you should pick up The Well-Fed Writer by Peter Bowerman. And this is before Amazon, kids. I had to drive myself to Barnes and Noble.
You had to go to a bookstore.
You know, 20 bucks that I didn't have at a time when I'm living on 39-cent Del Taco tacos, because that's how broke I am. Read the whole thing in an afternoon. And that was really, it turns out years later, I would find out I had copywriting books before, but I didn't understand them. That whole contextual awareness thing, right? The Well-Fed Writer put it in a way that I could understand. Oh, brochures exist. Commercials exist. Somebody had to create those in order for them to exist. I could be the person that creates them. Look, I have this entertainment, this screenwriting
you
background.
You had a little bit of the background. Okay, yeah. Absolutely. Having worked in entertainment. Absolutely. And so business development for shows. That's no joke.
Mm-hmm. That's intense. So, you know, I joined all of the sites that he recommended, Elance, which is now Upwork, and all. I was in there on the early days, and I took every writing. So I think that's stage one when you decide to embrace an idea. Okay, I'm a copywriter now. And to me, the first step was take every project and validate that you can get paid to be a copywriter, right? I wrote business plans. I edited people's scripts, people's books. I helped them write their website copy. My favorite project, I think, was I wrote the live production script for the Miss Black USA pageant for several years in a row. And that was a whole lot of fun.
So fun.
I'd never written a live production script before, but I figured it out. You know, Google is your friend, kids. Google will teach you a lot.
Oh my gosh, I could jam on with you for that for a while, but we won't go down that rabbit hole. But I wrote scripts, you know, because I was in television and I wrote a lot of scripts. And then I ended up doing scripted television for like HGTV and DIY and Food Network. And so I produced a lot of those shows and I had to learn how to write those scripts. It was a little bit different than a 30-second news article that was going on television. Then now I'm suddenly writing 30-minute TV shows or hour-long TV shows. And it's just fascinating that you have that background too. And I didn't know that about you, but that's a whole thing, but keep going, because you suddenly found out, okay, I can write this, I can write that. And you taught yourself to be a copywriter and how to get paid. And then you were taking courses, right? You were like also refining the skill by learning from others in the field.
Well, that's where I was getting scrappy, right? Because obviously I'm on Elance and Upwork, and I mentioned that I didn't really have the business context, and this is leading into what eventually became Permission to Kick Ass. I'm not doing well because I'm getting a couple $100 here and there, and I'm working my behind off to get these things. And sometimes they go well and sometimes they don't great, but they don't go great because I don't have any filtration. I don't have any context to be able to set expectations or determine who's a good client for me. All these things I had to learn the hard way. So at one point when I realized I'm like 10 months in, this is not working. I don't know what I'm missing. I had a sudden moment of clarity where I went, I'm trying to learn two different things at the same time. And I think that that's what's happening. I'm trying to learn copywriting and get really good at that. And I'm trying to figure out how to build a business, and something's got to give here. So I made the decision that I think changed everything for me, and that I think a lot of freelancers or would-be business owners, you know, it sparks some shame to go in-house to take a job. I saw it as a smart decision because I'm getting paid to learn on somebody else's dime.
Mm-hmm.
I think I applied for like 400 jobs, copyright. I tried for it all. I had lots of interviews. Ultimately, I got a Craigslist job that I found for a junior copywriter that happened to be about six blocks from where I lived. Like, talk about things working out the way that it needs. Part-time junior role paid me $22 an hour. I had a set number of blog posts, emails, and product descriptions to write every week, and it gave me time to continue to work on my business building skills. So it was like the best of all worlds possible. Now, I worked there for about 15 months before I started to get, you know, the additional context and realized I'm not growing. I'm not being challenged. I'm not really part of setting. I just take assignments, right? And I churn out content, which is great. I proved that I could get paid to write, and now I'm ready for something more. So then I applied for full-time roles and got one at a company that doesn't exist anymore, but they used to be a subsidiary of Lowe's, so a home improvement company.
Mm-hmm.
And within my first 2 weeks, I had to figure out how to write a retail catalog using Adobe InDesign, which I had never used before. And I had to do it in 3 days. So talk about trial by fire, just like figuring stuff out, saying yes.
And saying, I love that you said that. It's like saying yes, you know, that's a lot of times what it's about. And I think I love this story because, I mean, there's a lot of us out there that have been pretty scrappy. I love that you use that word. And someone who maybe doesn't identify that way, but is desiring to step into something that's new to them. Maybe like they were like you, they didn't really see themselves as an expert. They have a little experience, but would they call themselves an expert? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really just like, just do it, like step into it, call yourself an, you know, be the expert that you are today. Like, we can always be better. I always say this about storytelling and speaking. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm constantly enrolling myself into other people's programs that help me be a better storyteller and a speaker. Because that's like, I am an expert and I own it, but I can always be a better expert. Right.
Yes.
And so wherever we are on the timeline is where we are, but like, you're not, you weren't just born yesterday. We have lived experience. We have knowledge. Like you said, like the divorce example, like we've been through stuff in our life that might make us the accidental expert. So I think this is really helpful for, you know, the listening audience, I hope, because, you know, we do need to give ourselves more permission to own our gifts and own our desires, like what we want, and name it, and then go after it. And if that means you need to like teach yourself how to do it, you need to hire a mentor, you maybe need a full-time job doing it, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Can I love that. Just circle back to highlight something that I think you said was genius in case somebody missed it here, right? I know a common fear, I coach a lot of people who are building creative businesses these days, and I consult with a lot of creative service providers. So a big fear that I hear people in early stages of their business express is, but I can't do that because somebody else is doing that. Right. Or there, it's saturated. There's a whole lot of competition. Did you hear April just mention She is a storyteller. She teaches storytelling, and she constantly invests in other courses to help her become a better storyteller. There is no law out there that says I have to pick my mentor and never shall we part. Like, people who are interested in what you do buy from multiple people, so they could buy from you and they could buy from them and they could choose you to be their leader and follow you exclusively. But there's more than enough room for all of us. And we all have different voices. And April and I both specialize in being storytellers, and we come at it from different backgrounds,
different perspectives, different voices. Yes. Yeah, that is really good. You're right. Like, there's so much room, and you're really right about most of us will hire multiple people in the same field and learn from both people in different ways and get something from one person, get something different from someone else, and both be good. And it'd be helpful to us. And so that is really, really good. You know, I hear that a lot, people like having that scarcity around that imposter of like, well, I mean, someone's already doing it, so why should I do it? And it's like, well, it's kind of goes back to the storytelling piece that I always say, because those other people don't have your unique story. Those other people don't have your unique path. Kind of like what you just pointed out between the two of us, we both, you know, are storytellers in our own way, but we, even though we have a little bit of shared television experience, but we really come at it from a very different lived experience and backgrounds. And you know, you didn't have formal training, you self-taught. I've had some formal training and I've had to self-teach also, but like we all come at it in different ways. But more so than even that is how we choose. This is where the permission to kick ass shows up, right? Is how we choose to show up and take up space in the world and share our story so that a certain group of people will be magnetized to us. Specifically, right? Some people want to gonna work with me, and some people are gonna want to work with someone else, right? Some people are gonna work with you as a copywriter or as a consultant around copywriting. Someone else is gonna go down the road and hire somebody else because of how we show up, how we tell our story, how we showcase our experience, how we command the space of being in the expert that we are. I think that is so important.
Oh yeah, it's fascinating to me how we all come to this too, because owning my expertise, owning my story, my whole personality has been a lifelong journey and a lifelong struggle. I'm diagnosed as an adult ADHD, which explains a lot about my personality and how I've always been a little bit too much in certain scenarios. But I've always been a bit of a tomboy, inclined to bright red hair, piercings and tattoos, accidentally dropping F-bombs. I'm trying to be courteous on the show for anybody that doesn't like a potty mouth, right? And I've always gotten the message. Thankfully, it's a little bit more relaxed now. But growing up, when I did, I'm a Zennial, you know, like in between the millennials and the Gen X. That's not professional. You need to be professional. You need to appear a certain way. You need to behave a certain way. And so even after my mentor told me, like, you can go out there and help people exactly as you are, I was still profoundly uncomfortable with being Angie the expert.
Being Angie, like, yeah.
Fully Angie. I was still buttoned up and kind of closed down and wasn't really letting people know who I was until another copywriting event where had a couple cocktails, got a little bold and brave, and we somehow got on the conversation on the topic of concerts. And I talked about how I had been in several mosh pit fights, and I literally watched somebody go.
They leaned in.
Who is this? Tell me more. How did I not know
Angie?
This?
Angie?
Yes. Angie? They leaned in. How did I not know this about you? I'm like, you didn't know that I had, like, to me, all of this stuff about me is so obvious because it's my lived experience, but I was hiding it from other people.
Yeah.
And then that was what they found most interesting. And of course, it turns people off. I remember when I first launched my show and I was doing paid ads to drive some traffic to it, Permission to Kick Ass. And I would get comments like, well, you'd have a lot more luck if you changed it to Permission to Kick Butt. And I'm like, first of all, F you. Second of all, I chose the name with purpose. It's there for a reason. Third of all, if you would like to pay for me to change all of the marketing and the branding and the URLs and the links and the blah, blah, blah to Permission to Kick Butt, be my guest. That will help me greatly. But no, we're rolling with the branding, even if the advertisers don't like me to say ass.
You know, I think that speaks volumes because, I mean, it's not just like that particular word choice, but in so many ways where people want us, well, if you would just tweak that just a little bit, you know, if you wouldn't wear the red lipstick and you would wear the pink lipstick, if you would, you know, take out, not have the tattoo or cover them up, you know, or
make me more comfortable,
you know, just tweak it just enough to make me more comfortable around you. And I'm telling you what, that's a whole tangent we could go on, because it really gets me riled up about how we do this in our society to women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we're doing it that much to men.
No. My friend of mine, dear departed, name but of Mary Gilkerson, who is an artist online. I love her dearly. She's from South Carolina, and we used to talk about that, particularly as it raised to or pertains to both of us being from the South. I'm from Texas. She's from South Carolina. We used to jokingly call it Southern Woman Syndrome. Bite your tongue. Be polite. Don't rock the boat, meet certain expectations, take care of people. And I'm like, I want to take care of people I give a crap about, and I don't care about anybody else. Like, once you make it into my world, yes, I will take care of you, but I'm not going out of my way to take care of strangers, not anymore. And that might be a turnoff for some people, that I'm not being a woman in the traditional regard, but I'm not for them and they're not for me. And that's okay, because there's 8 billion people on this planet and we can't all love everybody. That would be way too much.
I mean, we don't have the capacity to take care of the whole world. We don't have the capacity to you know, be who everyone else needs us to be. Like, it just will be a really quick way to a fast demise of your personal spirit, like, you know, your soul. And a lot of people are walking this path, and it's hard to watch. But the more that women like you, you know, show up saying, I'm actually going to say the word ass and not butt in my book and in all my podcasts, because that's the word I choose. That's the word that it helps like make my statement or whatever, whyever you choose that, like whyever you chose it. So, you know, instead of saying like, oh, sure, let me just succumb to you wanting to tweak me just a little bit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And which, you know, it's just a whole nother level of the meaning permission to kick ass anyway.
Layers upon layers,
which I'm here for. Totally here for that, you know. And we're not meant to be all things for all people. We all have our unique, I really do believe this, like our unique mission that we've been given, and you know, how God designed us to show up and to serve at a certain level. You know, I even thought about this recently, because I know you and I are like go-getters and like da da da. We're in these masterminds, we're like go build and do all the things. And There's been a part of me that's been exploring this, like, because I'm, you know, we're around a lot of big thinkers and a lot of big ideas and people that are able to just like grow and scale like to massive degrees. And I'm like, you know, I haven't always felt this way, but it's coming to me more now, because I've always kind of beat myself up a little bit behind the scenes privately, like, April, and I'm a big thinker. I know I am, but I feel like I'm not as big as I want to be, right? Like in terms of my thinking, like I have a hard time dreaming of like, what is my life going to look like in 10 years? I hate that question. I really struggle with that, because I'm like, I don't know.
Thank you for articulating that. I feel the same.
Wow. That's so big. I can't think that big, you know. And other people, they come up with these really crazy, amazing visions of what their life is going to look like in 10 years. And so that kind of thing. Right. And it really, I'm beginning to get some answers around that, because I have been like, why do I struggle with that? Like, why can't I tap in? And I really heard God say to me recently, April, like, you know, my definition of big, like you're already in it. Like you're already in it. Like, you know, stop comparing yourself to everyone else, which I know, intellectually, I know to not do that, but emotionally that's kind of hard. And it was like, my version of big is my own definition, right? And other people, they're on a different mission. They've been given a different assignment in this world. And what if my assignment is to not come up with some crazy vision that I'm going to go execute in 10 years? What if I'm already on the assignment and I'm already playing out the bigness of what I'm supposed to be doing? And I actually really think that's what it is. Like that gave me a lot of comfort. And I'm like, well, that makes a lot more sense, because I have beat myself up trying to like, why can't I like get myself into the vision beyond the vision, you know? And we live in a world, we surround around all these spiritual gurus and all that stuff, and they like beat that to death. And I'm like, no. We are not wrong, you know, by not playing big enough. Now, I counter that with saying, like, we do want to give you permission to go kick ass, but your version of that is your version. Your version, no one else's.
Yes, your version. And, you know, it's funny. I know I'm sounding like I'm hyping the book, but like one of my beta readers said,
oh, we want you to hype the book. Go for it.
She said this perfect quote that really just struck me because, like I said, I've worked with these folks that want to build businesses before. And she said, Angie will show you how to stay small without having to play small. And that really. And like, I hadn't thought about it like that before. And that was so snappy. And so I was like, of course, I was kind of jealous and wish I had written that myself, but, but was grateful to her for giving it to me and put it on the back cover. But that helped me realize there are so many people out there teaching you $1 million, bajillion dollar, oh my gosh, all of the money business. And that's not what I want. I do want to build a $1 million business, mostly because I come from a blue collar background. I'm the first person to really do this in my family. And I just want to see if it's possible and figure out how to get there for my own satisfaction. But do I want to be a millionaire? I don't know. I value time and adventure and freedom and connection with people a lot more than I do money. And so, and that goes back to my friend Mary, who, you know, we once were sitting when I was traveling as a digital nomad on my front porch of the Airbnb in Savannah, talking about life and business. And she told me, I have my team small on purpose because I don't want to manage a gigantic team. She goes, we take every Friday off. I have plenty of time to go paint, because she was an artist and she taught art lessons and sold collections online. And she goes, and we take the month of August off, and that's just fine by me. Yeah. And I loved the way she
put it. That's a rich life. That's a very rich life when you're fulfilled that way. Oh my gosh, Angie, you and I are so much alike, because that is, I've said that so many times that, you know, I have my sights set on building a $1 million business, and I will, I feel confident that I will. But not because I want the, you know, $1 million worth of headaches. It's a thing that I want to prove to myself. For a long time, I gave myself a storyline, which, you know, this is not my own therapy session, but I'll just share. But I gave myself a storyline. Yeah, that, you know, like I wasn't smart enough, you know, to figure things out. And that, to me, this has been like, oh, no, that's not true. I actually am smart enough to figure it out. And I'm going to have some fun figuring out how to build a 7-figure business. And when I get there, I'm going to be good. Like, you know, like I don't have, and again, this goes back to my, like, I don't have that 10-year vision of like, I'm going to build a 9-figure business and I'm going to do all these. I'm like, no, I definitely don't want that. Mm-hmm. And so that comes back to, you know, me really receiving the, like, your version of big is very different than what other people's version of big is. And that's totally okay. Because I too value, like, I value my family. I value time. I want time. I want money freedom. I definitely want the money that allows for the freedoms, but I don't want to go buy more shoes. I definitely do not want a bigger house. I do not. And I don't have a large house now, but we have a big enough house. And I am very clear that I do not want a bigger house. I do want to travel. You know, I want to spend time with my husband. I want to spend time, quality time, connections. Again, all these things that you were saying, I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the things that I value too. And so I think that's, you know, it's like, gosh, permission to let people really define for themselves. What is, if we're going to keep talking about business, which is what your book is about, you know, defining what, you know, that dream business is for you, and not compare it or have it measure up to what someone else's dream has been or is, you know, and so that permission to go, like, and be you.
Yes. Let the people say amen. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We're going to preach it. And can we set on fire the idea of that's just the way it is? This is how it's done in business, because that's not true.
It's not true at all.
It's not true. We live in a day and age where your startup cost can be an internet service provider subscription, like $10 a month to Google Workspace, and you're in freaking business.
You are.
Can go out there. It's another thing that I talk about in the book, where I think we've lost sight, especially in this day and age, of a lot of digital noise and a lot of people proclaiming the one thing that you're missing, which is another BS tactic, right?
Yeah.
You're not missing anything. You can figure out what the gaps are if you put yourself out there and take action and don't get stuck in study mode. Study mode will convince you that you don't know
That
enough
you
and
don't
it
know
will make you.
anything,
Yep.
that you're not
But
the expert enough.
if you think about people out there who, lemonade stand from my days, of course, it's a lot harder to do a lemonade stand these days. But back in my days, it was make some lemonade, set up shop on a corner in front of thirsty people who have money. Four ingredients and you're in business, right? And you still see it in flea markets on the weekend, garage sales on the weekend. There are still places where it's stuff for sale to people who want to buy stuff, and you have a way to get in touch face to face or via email or whatever, and a way to take money. And that's all you need. And it does not have to be more complicated than that. Of course, it gets more complicated when you start working on all of those aspects and generating consistent revenue and things like that. But if you focus on the simplicity, the rest can be figured out. And it does not have to look like anybody else's business. You get to go, I wonder if I could do it this way instead. Yes, you get to do that. That's how I built a life on the road as a digital nomad and figured out I could do 2 hour long indulgent morning routines, and I don't have to be up at my laptop first thing. I can cut out for half the day to go tour the Grand Ole Opry because that's the only tour that they had, or jump in a hot air balloon because morning is the best time apparently to do hot air ballooning over Albuquerque. Like, and I can do that and still get my work done, and nobody goes, oh, she's such a, she's always screwing around and never serious about it. Of course, I'm never serious. That's why people hire me. I'm seriously good at what I do, but am I a serious person? No.
Well, I think that that's something that going back to the freelance world, right? Where both of us have come from. I think that's something that I learned about when I would only call myself a freelancer. Now I don't use that word at all, but I'm still kind of doing the same thing, I mean, really, to be honest with you. But I mean, I do it differently, but I'm a business owner now, but it's not any different than how I was as a freelancer. And when I look at how I structured my days as a freelancer, it's not different than how I structure my days now. I gave myself that freedom. Because I could get the work done. And actually, this is a whole, commentary on corporate America anyway, because we're making people slaves to work 9 to 5, and actually it's really 7 to 8, and giving them a paycheck and telling them they must work for 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and it's going to take them that long to get all the said work done. And we actually know from, data and science and research that we can't perform at a high level for longer than really about 3 to 4 hours per day. And so if we're not out taking those hot air balloon rides and going and spending time doing our morning walk and, just going and having lunch with a friend in the middle of the day or whatever it is, like you're actually not productive. And this is actually how we do step into this world of thriving and really building stuff that's great, meaningful, purposeful, can help other people, because we ourselves, as the leaders of these organizations, are taking care of ourselves. We're taking care of the need to go laugh or the need to go play and be silly, or go, pet my dog and, that kind of thing. But, and I just think back, like, my gosh, I was doing all of that when I was a freelancer. I mean, just now, what's the difference is I just decided that I actually had everything already inside of me and capability to just be the business owner, giving myself that permission. So I
Well,
love
I love
that.
that. I feel like we've come full circle to what we were talking about at
In the
labels
beginning,
and
yeah.
like owning the identity at the beginning, because it's such a subtle shift to change from something like freelancer to business owner.
It
But
really
there's all
is.
the it's the context behind it, because freelancer implies like I sell freelance services. I, me, one to one work with these groups, right? Where business owner says it's not necessarily me. I provide services and products to people. I'm an offer owner. I'm not necessarily the so freelance can be tricky in that regard, because you can wind up hiring yourself to be an employee who does five times the work than when you're in a day job, because you're now doing the prospecting and the admin and the
For
bookkeeping and the
sure.
HR and like and the creative work on top of all of that. You don't when you go freelance, you don't just get to spend 8 hours a day writing, right? And gosh, imagine how productive we would be if it was like 3, 3, and 3. 3 hours of work, 3 hour lunch break, nap break. Always 3 hour afternoon break and then like done. Gosh, side tangent. But yeah, you can hire yourself as an employee, especially if all you've really known is jobs your entire life. If you really I don't want to say buy into because that's not the right language, but like if freelancer is all you're capable of labeling yourself, it can be a slippery slope if you
Sure
don't bring that
can.
consciousness to it. But when you switch to business owner, and you surround yourself with other people that challenge you to step up into that identity too, right? You start thinking in efficiencies and leverage and offers instead of how many more people do I need to contact and how many more services do I need to offer? Because at some point you're going to run out of time. You're just not going to have enough hours in the day to make the living that you want.
Now, I mean, we all get the same amount of time, and how are we using it? And it's, really, really important to look at that. And yeah, it's so, so, so true. I love this. I wanted to ask you a little bit about storytelling. Let's get to storytelling because, we talked about it earlier. We like both kind of work in storytelling, but just like come at it from a different approach. But, when you go and write a book and what you've done with Permission to Kick Ass, and I know, your story is a big part of the book, right? Like as you've shared the story with us today, how has tapping into your own story and sharing your story outwardly with others changed you as a copywriter and a storyteller?
Oh my goodness, that's such a great question. I mean, I know that I've gotten reflected back at me. I think one of the reviews that I loved that I read online, and I try not to read reviews too much, right? Because that's where people take out all of their pent-up aggression. So far, mine have all been positive, and the one that stood out to me was, she shows through her own stories that it's okay to be where you are, and it's okay to make mistakes. And she basically calls you out by calling herself out, and it never feels like she's, I'm paraphrasing here, but it never feels like she's calling you to the carpet and saying, you suck, and here are the reasons why. She's always using herself as an example so that you get to go through that deep dive analysis with her without feeling the shame feelings. And I was like, oh my gosh, talk about just a gut punch. My heart just swelled three sizes. That's exactly what I hoped for, but had never been able to articulate in writing the book, that maybe I can use myself as an example to allow other people to heal and grow. If that mission was achieved for that one person, oh, 5 years of noodling on that book was totally worth
Yes. And how do you think that's changed your approach now with like the clients that you get to work with?
Oh, it's changed everything about how I work with people because, I spent several years after I left that the big name marketing team freelancing as a copy chief running marketing teams. And I think one of my favorite things in working with clients in that regard and how I work with them now was our strategy sessions were always 1 hour a month, right? And people are like, how can you get much done in that? Not only can we set the strategy for the month, but we can also extract all of those stories. And my favorite example, it's hard to contextualize that, right? So a favorite example of mine is a skincare client that we had, and she's talking about having to liquidate stock to redesign a bottle. And I'm like, why are you redesigning the bottle? She's like, well, people would talk about how it was easy to knock over and spill, and I didn't realize that that was true until I knocked it over. And then I was scooping it all up and slathering, and she literally did that on a Zoom call. She's mimicking. I'm slathering it on every square inch that I can find because that's expensive serum, and I can't believe I just knocked it over. And I was like, stop. You are at the sink. You are getting ready to do the skincare routine. Tell me everything from the beginning. We literally pulled the transcript of that, added a call to action and talking about redesigning the bottle, and that instantly like tripled or quadrupled the normal sales that they would make on this very expensive, very proprietary product that you could basically only buy from them. And it was such an outsized response and people writing in. We actually added that to their welcome sequence too. And I'm getting a little bit into strategy here, and that's not my intent, but I just wanted to talk about how, like, this is happening every day, and those stories are the things that we tend to disregard as
We
not
just we
important.
totally discredit them. Yeah, people just toss those away and go, oh, nobody wants to hear about that.
But
Nobody
like
wants
my
to hear
Mosh
about me
Pit
scooping
story.
up the expensive serum and slathering it all over myself in an event to try to save it. Like, no. But yes,
When you
that's what we
get
want to hear.
animated and you have like frustration or elation or some other kind of strong emotion and people are leaning in, those are all signals to pay attention to that this might be a bigger story than you think it is, even if it feels super mundane and like an experience that everybody has. Well, maybe it's an experience that everybody has and you can tell that story and be the one to connect them all.
It's that simple. I love that it's helped you like look for those more,
Yes.
when working with your clients. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. This is so fun. I knew we were going to have a blast talking on the show. I really had like no plan other than we're just going to riff and like see where it goes. And I love all the places that it went. It was like super fun. And yes, we do want to pimp up the book. We like, go get it. Go get that book. Permission to Kick Ass. How could you not want that book? Like that kind of name. And it's not Permission to Kick Butt, people.
Mm-hmm.
It is permission to kick ass. And you need to go get it.
Absolutely. And I've got a vision for that. So like, speaking of vision, it's a vague vision, but I want it to be permission to kick ass at marketing, permission to kick ass at like a whole brand designed to help you get out of
brand
your
of all by itself. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a bigger vision for it, but it starts with giving yourself permission to get out there and do what you feel called to do, whether it's small, whether it's big, doesn't matter. Just do it, what your heart calls you to do, and trust.
Do what your heart is calling you to do and trust. There you go. From Angie Coley, author of Permission to Kick Ass and host of the podcast by the same name, which you definitely need to go listen to. We will link up all of her information so you can connect with her. If you need a great copywriter, just introduce you to one. And in my opinion, everybody needs a good copywriter. Mm-hmm. So yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thanks for coming and sharing your brilliance and your wisdom and your fun with everyone here on the Inside Story Podcast. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Isn't it fun? All right, everybody, go share this episode out. Connect with Angie through her online channels, which we will link up. Say hello. Let her know you listened. Subscribe, give us a review, and all the things that podcast hosts really like beg for all the time. We would really love to hear from you and know that you're listening and that you're enjoying and that you listened to this episode and really, what did you get out of it? What did we give you permission to go do today that has set you free? We would love to hear your story on that. All right, everyone, have an amazing day. Go share your story and we'll see you back here next week on another show for the Inside Story Podcast. See you then. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to give it a review and share this broadcast out with your friends and family. Now, did listening to this episode make you think more about your own story? Are you wondering which parts of your own story are relevant to share with others? This is the question I get asked more than any other. How do I share my story? Which parts of my story are worth sharing with other people? How can I make my story relatable so that others can benefit from it? I've taken my simple process that I've used for years as a journalist and broken it down into a three-part storytelling formula that will help you discover the key components of your own story and how to share it. It's a free resource I've created to help you become a light beamer by sharing your story. Simply go to www.lightbeamers.com and click on the big yellow button on the homepage to download your story formula. I'd love to hear your story too, so be sure to join my free community on Facebook, the Light Beamers Community, and share your story with me. I can't wait to learn more about you and the story that's inside of you. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can get notified when our next broadcast is live. You will want to stay tuned to the stories we are lining up for you next. I promise they are so good. As always, Light Beamers, I'm over here cheering for you.
This podcast is part of the Sound Advice FM network. Sound Advice FM, women's voices amplified.